I'm Jennings Carney of Pendrud, and this is Brewer to Brewer podcast from All About Beer. My guest today is Jared Olson of Forreston, Maine. He is here for a conversation that goes beyond the brew house and into topics that matter to brewing professionals and curious drinkers. First, please visit allaboutbeer.com and follow on social media at All About Beer. To support journalism in the beer space, check out patreon.com/allaboutbeer. We'll get into the conversation in just a moment, but first, this message.
This episode is brought to you by Osmanthus Flowers. Osmanthus radiates fresh floral spring like no other flower. Add Osmanthus to lambics, lagers, pilsners, whip beers, or other Belgian styles. First Tea is your source for Osmanthus and teas that fit the unique flavor profiles you're looking for. Email info@firstTea.com, that's F-I-R-S-D-T-E-A, to discover the perfect teas and botanicals for your next project.
For more than a decade, the Beer Law Center has been dedicated to the craft beverage industry, meeting the legal needs of breweries, wineries, distilleries, and all manner of alcohol producers and sellers around the country. From company formation to federal and state licensing, trademarks, regulations, and compliance, or if you're buying or selling an alcohol business, the Beer Law Center should be your first call. The firm never charges for an initial consultation, and if they can't help you, they'll help you find someone that can. Have a legal question? Contact the Beer Law Center on social media at Beer Law Center and online at beerlawcenter.com.
Ironheart Canning is the quality leader in mobile canning and much more. With a decade of packaging experience, Ironheart is your turnkey solution for all your canning needs. Ironheart has no minimums on their mobile service, great supply chain quality control like no other, as well as technical support programs. Need canning materials? Ironheart has you covered with cans by the pallet or the trailer load, Pactex case trays, and can ends as well. Ironheart Canning. You have the capability because Ironheart can do it for you. Visit them at ironheartcanning.com or email info@ironheartcanning.com.
Malt Europe Malting Company is based in North America, specializing in growing and producing quality malts for the craft beer and distilling industries. With local farms and malt houses spread across the United States, Canada, and Mexico, MMC's commitment to excellence is fully ingrained into every batch it produces, ensuring breweries and distilleries of any size can create the finest beverages on the planet. Visit MaltEuropeMaltingCo.com to learn how Malt Europe can support your malting needs. Or you can contact them at CustomerSuccess@MaltEurope.com or call 844-546-MALT for questions or to place your order. Malt Europe, premium grains from field to flavor.
Okay, let's get into it. A bit about my guest today. Jared Olson is the co-founder of Forreston, Maine Brewing Company. In 2012, Jared opened Forreston, Maine Brewing with friend Daniel Endicott in Ambler, PA, a small suburb of Philadelphia. Forreston, Maine began in a 1,200-square-foot Victorian house with a 7-barrel brew house, focusing on saisons and British pub beers, and serving a small menu of thoughtful food. As the brewery has slowly grown over the years, Jared has maintained a passion for saisons, brewed with yeast foraged from early blossoms each spring and locally sourced and malted grains. And British beers, low alcohol and served via one of the pub's 3 hand pumps. At the end of 2020, Jared and Daniel partnered with Brian D'Angelo and oversaw the expansion and move of Forreston, Maine to a larger 15-barrel brewery up the road and a new tap room on Ambler's Main Street. Along with additional volume, the new brewery has allowed them to add regular lager production as well as lots of IPA to their classic repertoire of Saison and British Session beers. Jared, what's up, dude? Welcome to the show.
How's it going, Jennings? Great to see you.
It's great to see you too. I guess we haven't talked in a while, so tell me, how are you? How have you been? Tell me about this move into the new production space, and also just because of the fact that you and I both use native yeasts, I really want to hear about your saisons. So I don't know, just how was the move? How are the saisons?
I've been well. The move for the brewery, I feel like we're settling in pretty well at this point. I guess we opened here at the new location in 2022. So we've kind of like got our feet under us at this point. In my mind, it still feels new. But at the same time, like, it's kind of remarkable how quickly you can get used to new things and then just kind of fall into new routines with new equipment and people on board. But yeah, it's been a cool transition. I think it was like a long time coming for us. In a lot of ways, I think like COVID pandemic kind of like made it happen when it did. And yeah, I don't know. I'm excited like where we're at, the beers we're making. I feel like it's a new system for us, but you know, I think we're still able to like bring our passion for the beers we were making in the past, you know, along with us here.
That's awesome. Tell me about the like, well, it's a two-part question. Like, tell me about the beers that you're excited about. Tell me about the system. But like, I mean, you guys are really known for your, I mean, I love your canned conditioned saisons, and also March mildness is amazing. I think those are absolutely amazing. So I don't know. Can you like tell me about the things that are really exciting you right now?
Yeah, those are kind of like my two favorite things we do here too. We make a ton of IPA. I'm psyched about like the lagers we're making, but I think like I'm still most stoked on like kind of what first got us into this, like the saisons and the pub beers. Yeah, and I think like part of me was curious when we made this move, because of how different our old system was compared to like what we have now, you know, were we going to like lose some of that kind of like hands-on touch? You know, like our old system, it was 7 barrels. It was really like cobbled together kind of Frankenstein system, like old dairy equipment, like a direct fire kettle that was really just like a big boy, like fryer thing. like for years, like we didn't have any glycol in the cellar. It was all just kind of like free rise fermentation with the saisons and the British beers, you know, they were like a lower ABV and they would ferment kind of quick without glycol as well. But just like the process of brewing beer there, you know, it was just like a pump on a cart and lots of like hoses that we would move around all day. So like you were just up in it the whole time, you know, just like really hands on. And I think part of me was curious when we moved to this system, it's bigger, but it's also not like automated, but there is like pneumatic valves and it's like got a touch screen, you know, and I was like, part of me was like a little nervous, like, are we going to like be missing some of that magic somehow? And I don't think that's the case at all. Like, I think you can't help but like be very hands-on and like you're right there while you're like mashing in and running off. And I think if anything, it's just kind of helped us be more consistent with the beers we're making. Like we can measure the water that we're adding rather than just kind of eyeballing the flow of the stream coming into the mash tun. So I think that transition's been really, really great for us. And yeah, so we just wrapped up March mildness. That was like a super, super fun one this year. We kind of jumped onto this event that Bill from Machine House in Seattle started. It's just kind of like a celebration of drinking mild throughout the month of March. We've done it the past couple of years in kind of different ways. We've just kind of like almost treated it as like a mild drinking competition throughout the month of March. Kind of have like sandwich cards for people. And then every time they order a pint of mild, they get their card stamped. And then at the end of the month, we crowned the mild master of the month. So that's what we've done in the past. Last year, we did a bunch of collaborations with like some breweries in the area, just trying to like spread the mild love a bit more. And then this year, we invited, you know, just like anybody who was kind of like in our area to like jump on board to try to brew a mild at their spot. And then we made these like mild passports where customers could kind of go from brewery to brewery and get like their passport stamped when they drank a mild. And we thought like maybe a couple breweries would be up for it. But we had like 30 some breweries. And
that's amazing.
Then we had this event at the end of the month where people could like turn in their cards. And, you know, again, we thought there'd be like a good crowd, but like nothing crazy. But there was like a ton of people that showed up. And we did like raffle tickets for every stamp that someone had on their passport. And I think there was like a few thousand tickets. So like,
wow.
What do you think about like just all those mild intentions out there over the month? It was a whole lot of fun.
I feel like that's the impetus for a pretty amazing t-shirt.
Yeah.
Mild intentions.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I mean, especially because like, you know, mild is such a, that's what I love about you guys. And by the way, I have to say, I have really fond memories of brewing on your brew house. I think it was really quite amazing. And so I sympathize with, you know, having a system that, you know, has a lot of nostalgia to it. And you're like, okay, wait a minute. If I leave this system, am I going to like give up these things? Also you're a runner, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I've gotten kind of like obsessed over the pandemic time. And
well, you're an ultra runner, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm gearing up for a 70 miler coming up, in the end of June. I've got a marathon coming up in a couple of weeks, but, 70 miler, big boy.
That's awesome. Have you thought about like doing like incorporating milds into the marathon, the mild marathon?
I like the alliteration.
Yeah,
it'd be like good, easy hydration, I guess. I do have a buddy, Bogdan. He brews at Attic in Philly. He used to brew with us a couple years ago, but he's like a serious runner too. And we talk about doing this collab where we run from like one of our breweries to the other guy's brewery and like take the yeast along with us. I think that'd be a fun awesome. One. Yeah.
That'd be awesome. Do you remember, do you know that runner Bernd Heinrich? He also wrote, he's a bird scientist, and he was like one of the original ultra runners, and he was trying to figure out how to basically sustain and get calories for like ultra running. And so one of the first things he experimented with was lager.
Huh, interesting.
Quickly realized that like at 50 miles and just drinking beer doesn't really work, but like so that's awesome. I also want to talk about like the hand pumps. Like, does anybody else around you guys do hand pumps? I mean, I think that's really amazing.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a few people here and there. We've definitely like had people reach out to us and see like where we've sourced ours from. We've, you know, since we opened, we've had three beer engines at the pub. So now we have like two tap rooms within Ambler. We have like the brewery tap room, and then about a half mile away, we have like the main tap room on the main street in town. And both of those, we have like three hand pumps there. Which is, I don't know, it feels kind of cool to have like six beer engines within Ambler. You know, it's a pretty small little suburb.
Oh yeah, dude.
But those beers, they just, I don't know, they shine, you know, being served that method. Just a little bit warmer, you know, softening up the carbonation. It was definitely like, I don't know, when we first opened, it wasn't the easiest sell for a lot of people. We would have like some beard nerds coming in that like knew about it and like, you know, were all about it. But I think pretty early on, we had a reputation for like just warm, flat beer. And like, it wasn't exactly like what we were going for. Like, I would hear people in town be like, oh yeah, you've got that spot with like the warm beer, right? It's like, not quite warm beer, but cellar temp.
Right. I'm curious, what decided you and like Dan to kind of move into that area? Did you guys go to England? Did you guys study the style over there? I mean, what, why did you gravitate towards that? And then by extension, why did you like how did you gravitate in towards the Saisons?
Yeah. I think we were both just like really into those beers, just from what we were drinking at the time. When I was home brewing, even like before I started brewing professionally, I feel like I gravitated toward both those styles. They're just kind of like forgiving to make at home, and you know, just kind of wanted something that I could drink easily. And those beers kind of fit the bill. I think Dan had a similar story. Dan actually studied brewing in Sunderland in England at the Brew Lab, has a program over there. So he got some like hands-on experience with like kind of old school, like British brewing methods. And then kind of brought that back home. And then, yeah, with like the Saison brewing, kind of came into that like originally through home brewing. I think like the more I was like reading about those beers and like learning about them, they just had like the most romantic story to them. Just like this idea of like beers that were connected to, you know, the land, connected to farms, connected to like just really expressive like fermentation. The fact that like you couldn't really engineer them the same way that like other styles could be made. I just found like all that super romantic and appealing. The first brewing job I had was at McKenzie Brew House, and it was just like a small brew pub, but we had the opportunity there to brew lots of Saison. So got like a lot of great experience just like doing that on a big scale. And then, yeah, just kind of knew that that was like the style that spoke to me the most, I think.
Mm-hmm. And you guys culture a new yeast every spring?
Yeah. So pretty shortly after we opened, I was kind of like taken with the idea of trying to, you know, make the beer as connected to our area as possible. And at the time there were like some like local maltsters and, you know, people growing hops locally, but I don't think they were kind of at the quality where they are now. And maybe they weren't quite as available or as affordable as they are now. So in a lot of ways I felt like the best way to kind of get that connection to a terroir was like through like a microbial terroir, by like trying to like see what yeast we could pull, you know, from our area. So each spring, or I guess like the first spring, I tried like just seeing, there's like this big cherry tree in the front of the property, and it's like the first thing that like blooms in the whole neighborhood each spring. It's kind of just like this like ta-da, it's spring. So I tried like culturing some of those blossoms and just kind of like vetted sugar and kind of really rudimentary, like no real lab equipment, no isolation of any cells. We just kind of more akin to like a sourdough starter, or I don't know if you know Sandor Katz and like wild fermentation. Way he kind of does like a ginger bug by just kind of like feeding it like sugar, kind of doubling the volume every day. And so I think like initially we were just kind of shocked that like it worked and it like fermented, and then like became like really shocked that it was like, it felt like a Saison yeast, you know, it felt like we were getting like quote unquote, like Belgian, classic Belgian, like flavors from it. Which like almost had this like kind of spiritual connection for us where it's just like, whoa, these are like the beers we love, the beers like we want to make, and the microbes in this area like want to make the same stuff, you know, it felt like a blessing. Then kind of like, so we were like really happy with how that came out the first year. Kind of came up with the idea of trying to do that each spring, you know, kind of give it like in a way like a vintage character. So kind of go back to that tree, or some like other like flowering stuff in the spring, and then kind of grow it all up again, and then just kind of like commit to that culture as being the Saison yeast for that year. Which is kind of like, you know, hard at first, because like you get a year of experience with a certain culture and then kind of commit to this new one and then like then ditch and like throw away the old one and kind of like move on to it. But it's been like, I don't know, it's been pretty rewarding. I think like there has been like variation from year to year, but at the same time, like a fair amount of consistency. I think a lot of that like probably has to do with like how you treat the yeast and the culture. Like we kind of naturally put a certain like selective pressure on like what's able to grow and like how it expresses itself. So even if like we're harvesting different things from year to year, we're probably like creating similar conditions from year to year for it to like kind of like work its way into what we want it to be, I guess.
I get that. Yeah, for sure. Have you ever, you could always do like a, you ever thought about doing like a master blend in, like you take all of the, like at the end of the year, instead of throwing it away, you just throw all of them into a barrel.
Huh. I mean, I guess in a way, like a lot of those beers make their way into barrels.
Sure.
So like in a way, like that culture is in, you know, all around us, from year to year. Yeah.
Yeah. I would say that from personal experience, because I mean we don't go annually, but we cultured up ours in that similar way, where it was just kind of, we just kind of grew it up, but we've been using it for almost 9 years now. Like, I do agree with you, like if you give it certain stimuli over the course, you can kind of push it one way or push it another way, and
yeah,
you know, I guess it is a living thing, so it, you know, you give it the same parameters and it will theoretically behave the same way, more or less.
In a way, that's like a lesson that like I feel like I like relearn over and over. Sometimes like it feels obvious when we relearn it, like we'll be like, why is this batch like so much more acidic than the one before, and then, like trying to figure it out, trying to look at like mash pH and this and that, and it's like, oh dummy, like you didn't hop it the same way you did, you know, like,
right,
you backed off like the hops on like the batch before, you know, and like now it's a little more tart. I think that's right. Kind of been like one of the most dramatic things that we've been able to see, just like the amount of acid it can produce, you know, with like a lower hopped wort versus like a really hoppy wort.
Oh yeah, well actually, so that's interesting. Does it like will it like produce like, so for instance, like batch A will produce like, you know, it'll have a lot of acid and then you'll hop it and then like the next batch won't, but then if you don't hop it again, will it start producing acid again, or will it take a few batches, or I mean, are you beating that bacteria back, or
I think it responds pretty quickly. I would say like within a batch, like you can see it. But I think like if we harvest yeast from a more acidic batch and then the next beer that it goes into is like really hoppy, I think that batch would not have the acid character.
Right.
It would like learn its lesson that quickly.
and then you guys are, you're can conditioning, and I'm like super curious about this. So you're taking this like year to year and then you're putting them in cans, are we?
Yeah. Yeah,
and are you like, tell me.
Yeah, I mean, we treat it, I guess, similarly to our approach to bottle conditioning. We let the beer come as close to what we think terminal is going to be. We try to package these beers like pretty fresh, like so that there is a good bit of yeast still in suspension. We don't like repitch any yeast, but we'll prime it with sugar. I kind of use like the the brewer's friend calculator for all our priming additions.
Dude, I love that calculator.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah, I use
got
that
on the bookmark.
Yeah. So like I'll calculate to, I think like around like 2.8 volumes for the priming sugar addition.
You're a gambling man.
Yeah, for the bottles we do, I would prime at like a higher level, like in the low threes. Uh-huh. but we're just kind of thinking that like this beer would be a terminal, like if we just like, you know, crashed it, put it on draft or whatever. But theoretically, like if these cans sit warm for a while, like maybe it could keep chewing and, you know, keep bubbling up in there. So kind of shoot on like the lower end of like what our saisons would typically be in the bottle. But yeah, so then we run it through like our same canning line that we do all our beers on. It was super weird at first, you know, like you're filling cans and they're like squishy, you know, after they get the seam. But the yeast is like, we don't crash these beers before we package them. So we're like packaging them warm. That's another weird thing too, just like feeling this like warm, squishy can coming off the line. But usually, you know, if it's warm in the brewery, like by that weekend, those cans are like rock hard and like they're developing like their carb. Usually like there's a good bit of like diacetyl that sticks around for like a week or two. And then usually once that's gone, we're like confident that, you know, the beer's good to go. The diacetyl, that's awesome. it's pretty predictable, like in how it shows up and then how it goes away. In the canned beers, I don't think we've ever noticed any like THP or other stuff that we see in bottle conditioning. But yeah, the turnaround for the cans is a lot quicker. You know, we're usually within like 4 to 6 weeks, I'd say.
Right. I mean, I guess cans aren't really known for like, oh, I'm going to stick this in my cellar and sit on it for like a year and a half.
Yeah. I mean, like we did that, especially with like some of like the earlier batches, just like see how they aged. And it was, I don't know, they held up incredible. It was awesome. I always just like loved that idea of like, you know, maybe just like coming from homebrewing days of like packaging the beer, like with yeast in it, like it's going to scavenge all the oxygen that's there. It's going to kind of like do its job to like protect the beer over time.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really cool. I mean, you know, in full disclosure, I mean, I'm asking purely for selfish reasons because I'm super interested in this.
Yeah.
No, but I think it's really fascinating. I think it's really cool what you guys are doing, especially because, you know, canned condition saison to me is it's wonderful. And what you're, you know, it speaks to, especially using like the native yeast, it speaks to terroir, it speaks to a sense of place. And you just get those tiny bubbles and like the head retention is amazing. And it's just a completely different kind of beer. And I think it's really amazing to all do that.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. They get like a different character than beers that get force carbed and canned. Not that those are bad. You know, we've also like force carbed some saisons and canned them too. But the canned condition ones, you know, they have that extra layer of character to them.
For sure.
I do think that they like age better. It's something like we've talked about doing for some of like the British pub beers that we can as well. We've never tried it for whatever reason. Maybe we're just lazy. You know, it's an extra step that like mixing the sugar and like, you know, recirculating it beforehand. But aside from that, like it's a pretty easy process. You know, it adds a little bit of time to the canning day, but not a ton.
Right. Yeah. That's cool. Well, we are going to take a short break for this message and then come right back for more of this conversation with Jared Olson.
Brewers across the globe have leveraged the popularity of Osmanthus-scented beers. Now, First Tea is bringing that clean, natural flower to North America. Email info@firsttea.com, that's FIRSDTEA, to find out how to use this delicate flower in lagers, wheat beers, and more.
For more than a decade, the Beer Law Center has been dedicated to the craft beverage industry, meeting the legal needs of breweries, wineries, distilleries, and all manner of alcohol producers and sellers around the country. From company formation to federal and state licensing, trademarks, regulations, and compliance, or if you're buying or selling an alcohol business, the Beer Law Center should be your first call. The firm never charges for an initial consultation, and if they can't help you, they'll help you find someone that can. Have a legal question? Contact the Beer Law Center on social media at Beer Law Center and online at beerlawcenter.com.
Malt Europe Malting Company is based in North America, specializing in growing and producing quality malts for the craft beer and distilling industries. With local farms and malt houses spread across the United States, Canada, and Mexico, MMC's commitment to excellence is fully ingrained into every batch it produces, ensuring breweries and distilleries of any size can create the finest beverages on the planet. Visit MaltEuropeMaltingCo.com to learn how Malt Europe can support your malting needs. Or you can contact them at CustomerSuccess@MaltEurope.com or call 844-546-MALT for questions or to place your order. Malt Europe, premium grains from field to flavor.
Welcome back. So tell me about the... Yeah, so the new spot, you guys are doing lagers there. You guys are doing IPAs. You're on a 15 barrel system. What are some? I mean, it is kind of interesting. It's like, does that create a different headspace for you? I mean, are these like two emotionally different spaces? Like you have your old spot, and you have your can conditioned saisons, and you have your milds, and then you have lagers, and you have IPA. I mean. Like how does that fit into the heart and mind of Jared Olson?
Yeah, no, that's a cool question. And I think that like touches on too, just like, you know, like we're about to have like our 12th anniversary, you know, and I think it touches on just like how your role can like evolve and change and like, you know, your responsibilities like early on versus like what they are now. Like early on, you know, it's like very hands-on brewing all the beers, also like managing, you know, the restaurant side of things. So it'd be staying there, like closing the restaurant, you know, sort of interacting with like back of house staff, front of house staff, sometimes like hosting and the customers, and then, you know, transferring beer into barrels after like the kitchen closed down. That's like not very sustainable. And like it wasn't going to last that long.
Right.
But like it's weird because like you get used to that and you think that like this is who I am. This is what I do. I do this crazy stuff. Like I have this lifestyle. And then like you maybe drop something or like you can pass off a certain responsibility to someone else. You know, so for Dan and I think initially that was maybe like when we first started hiring like managers, you know, to handle the front of house and back of house, like at the restaurant and the bar. So we weren't like closing the bar every night, you know, we could go home to our families. So like passing off that responsibility was maybe like one thing. We're still like very hands-on in the brewery and like touching and like, you know, involved in every aspect of every single beer. And then you get used to that for a little while. And then, I don't know, other things like grow or we added on like, you know, the new space. So like the volume changes a little bit. And then it's like clear, we need some help in the brew house. So you bring on, you know, someone else and, I feel like those were kind of like some of the harder things for me. Like personally, it's like if I wasn't, you know, hands-on making and doing everything for every beer, like I felt like I was like losing something, you know, or I felt like that's yeah. who I was or like what my role here was. But again, that wasn't going to be sustainable, you know. So kind of. You get used to like passing that off too. And, you know, we hired some great people that were able to like, you know, take that on. And then I was able to like step back from that. But then it's kind of like you get to another point where it's like, okay, well, if I'm not doing that, then like what am I doing? You know, if I'm not like running around like a crazy squirrel, you know, what is my role here? And I think that's like, I don't know, it's been cool to see that evolution. It's been great, like with this move, the staff we have in the brew house now, you know, they're just awesome, kicking butt. They're like super methodical. I feel like the beers we're putting out now are like the best they've ever been. And I think it's because like we have the right people in the right spots doing those things. So yeah, as far as like the headspace of it, you know, it's like, I feel like less on the ground with it all and more kind of like in my head about it, you know, like almost more of like a philosophical approach to it. Yeah, but it's tough.
Do they, I mean, okay, go ahead. It's, you said it's tough.
Yeah. I think it's like tough just, you know, getting older and like, you know, like who am I? Like, you know, you're changing your role, you know, but you feel like the same person. Like it's the same brewery, but it's different, you know. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's cool.
Yeah, I think it is cool. I mean, I totally hear that. I think there is a lot of identification initially, right? Because you start the brewery, it's you and Dan. You put your heart and soul into it, and you know, you're, like you said, you're touching all the beers, you're doing all the work. And then all of a sudden you things change and you say like, well, if I'm not doing this, then yeah, what am I doing? I mean, it is interesting, because it's like, on one level, it's so material, such a material question, but then it can become a very much more of a metaphysical question. Of like what it is, you know. And I just heard today, I was listening to a very interesting interview, and they said that, you know, being an entrepreneur or a small business owner is as much of an exercise as opening a business and running a business as it is a journey of self-discovery and really just trying to figure out, like, you know, who you are and what it is that you're doing. So I can relate to that for sure.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Do those old seven barrel days feel like the Halcyon days to you, or are you just like, nah, man, like Excelsior, like let's fucking turn and burn, baby?
Yeah, I feel like it's mixed. I think it's mixed. We still have some like seven barrel Grundys like rolling around the brewery. Like we use those like to bottle and like blend all the saisons, actually, so they still get like beer in them. And then our old like kettle and mash tun are kind of like decorative pieces around here, so we still like see that stuff. But it's funny, we did a collab a couple months ago, and the brew house was like really kind of like chaotic and like hands-on and like, you know, pipes and hoses everywhere. And initially, like, part of me like felt like a kind of like nostalgia, or just like understood like, oh, I know what they're going through. Like, yeah, that's crazy. That's so much fun. And then like really quickly though, like, I was just like, I don't want to do that anymore. Like, like those days are over. I think it was great that it happened, but like, I think one of the first things I realized with like the new brewery was when I just like the amount of like bending over I didn't have to do anymore, you know, like everything was just like at a much more accessible level. There's much less like just like connecting hoses all over the ground.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I can imagine with the it is it's a much different process. Sorry, yeah. Hold on 1 second.
Yeah.
Yes, you can use a tractor. Yeah. Sorry, I had somebody coming in to get our grain.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah. So yeah. So anyway, sorry, keep going.
Yeah, so I don't know. I guess like moving on into this space, like it feels like a new home. It feels like this is like where we were supposed to be. I feel like lucky that we were able to like stay within Ambler. You know, it's a small town. So like having the option to like be in like a more warehousey kind of building, you know, felt kind of fortunate. All three of us have like our families like within a couple blocks of the brewery. Just pretty great. Yeah.
That's amazing. So getting into just some like, look, I have some questions, like what kind of lagers are you guys doing now? And yeah, I guess we should talk about IPA, because people make IPAs.
Yeah.
So, yeah, what kind of lagers are you making?
Yeah, the lager program has been awesome. We have two 15 barrel horizontal tanks that we get to lay them down sideways. Everybody
Yes.
knows that sideways lagers are the best.
Oh yeah.
And we've been kind of surprised at so like with this expansion, we've taken on a good bit more distro and like wholesale sales. And we're moving like as much lager as, like the Saison and the pub beers that we're kind of like more known for beforehand. Just pretty cool. We kind of, I don't know, as far as like styles of lager, I feel like that's one family of beer. Like maybe we're like more reluctant to say like this is like our Pilsner or this is like our Helles. Just because I don't know, those feel like more like well-defined styles in my mind anyway. So like working with like the water we have here and like just the way the beer comes out, like it feels like a stretch sometimes to say like this one fits into this category.
What kind of water do you have?
It's really, 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 really hard.
I like the two or three release.
Yeah, needed to stress it. We filter it like just to take out the chlorine from the city. But yeah, when we set up the brewery here, we always knew it was hard. We got like water report done, like before we opened the original spot. The way the our setup worked over there, we had like a hot liquor holding tank, but it wasn't really like didn't have any heating element in it. So we would heat all the water we needed for a brew day, like in the kettle, usually like the night before, and then kind of bring it back up to temp, like the morning of. And we would notice, that after boiling the water the night before, after it cooled overnight, it would precipitate a ton of salt at the bottom of the kettle. So after we would like mash in and use all that water, we'd kind of like whirlpool what was left, and you'd have this like big salty cone at the bottom of the kettle. But when we set up the brew house here, it was really crazy with like the big hot liquor tank we have. We had like a recirculating pump going, and just kind of like kept it hot the whole time. And it really, I forget like how long it took before this happened. It really wasn't that long. But the pump like just completely seized up, and like we didn't understand why at the time. We took it apart, opened it up, and it was just like a salt brick. Like just the entire pump
Whoa.
was like locked. So then like we opened up the hot liquor tank and like peeked inside, and just like it was like inches and inches of salt. We had to like shovel it out.
Whoa, dude.
Yeah, super hard water. But I think it lends itself, to the beers we make. I think it works really good in the Saisons, works excellent, especially for like the darker pub beers, but kind of like all the British stuff.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
But I think that was one of the things with lagers we were kind of like most tentative about. Just like, can we brew like a nice, delicate, soft lager with this like really hard water? And I think the combination of just like the yeast we're using and like the hopping rates that we're doing, I think it works really well. I think we're making like really beautiful stuff. We use that Andex lager yeast. I think it just has like an awesome, like gentle, soft, kind of doughy fruit character to it. And then I think just like, yeah, the amount of hops like the beers can take is maybe like a little can handle like a little more like robust hopping, I think, just like with the harder water maybe, or just kind of like
What kind of,
leaning into it in a way, I guess.
yeah, totally. What kind of hops do you like to use with them?
I think like we love like the real traditional stuff, like the Hallertau, Hersbrucker, Saaz. We love like the German Saffer. those are like all classic, but then even some like funner new stuff has been pretty cool. The Grüngeist has been a cool one. And we've done a couple with like Motueka that like kind of like surprised us all.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. But yeah, we have a beer called House Lager, you know, that's again, like reluctant to call it like a Pilsner, but it kind of like fits that placeholder for a lot of people. We do like a darker one once a year, like a nice kind of Schwarz beer style, but again, kind of reluctant to like call it that. But yeah, in general, I think just like leaning toward lighter, hoppier stuff, kind of like do a rotation of like maybe a different grain along with the barley. So like us, we just released a Dinkel lager with a good portion of Spelt, in it.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. They're fun beers. And I think, the system we have just kind of like really lends itself to that. Especially like compared to what we were coming from, just like the consistency aspect and like the repeatability for like a lot of these beers. The brew house is also like set up to do, like we have like a mash kettle and a louder ton. So most all our beers are just like single infusion, just like mash right into the louder ton. But for a lot of the lagers, we've been playing with like different decoction schedules, kind of just cause we can. And it's one of those things. It's like, I don't know, can you notice the difference? I like to think we do. I notice different like smells, like when we're making the, like when we're brewing the beer, you know? And I like to think that like, if you smell something different, like on the brew day, like it's affecting something, you know?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, you're changing the sugars. I mean, especially with decoction, I mean, you're changing the sugars. You're going to have different, yeast is going to interact differently with it. I mean, it, at least it's been my experience. Like when I turbid mash for our spontaneous days, traditional turbid mash, it's like that wort smells not totally different, but it smells very different than just like a single infusion for, you know, like our blonde, you know, for sure. And you get a different beer. Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure. That's awesome. Yeah, I love those horizontal tanks. I actually have a buddy who's a really amazing winemaker here, and he took one of those lager tanks, but he's using it for Chardonnay.
He put it
down on side. Yeah, well, he was like, you know, it creates the ester profile just like shoots to the roof and creates this like really nice like acid forward, you know, more like a Chardonnay you would get in France than like, you know, like an oaky ML forward California. Nothing wrong with that, but I'm just saying, you know.
Yeah. No, that's interesting.
That's cool, man. That's super cool.
Yeah.
And then do you find like the your customer base, I mean, they've clearly with like the March mildness and people getting like super excited about that, and then you guys are selling a lot of lagers. Like, are you guys doing IPAs not because they're very popular, but also, I mean, like, how do you approach them? I mean, do you guys like, I mean, are you doing like, you know, you want to do like a historical, like West Coast with caramel malts and like super clear, or are you doing like hazies? Like, you know, how do you like to approach?
Yeah. I mean, we probably make, not like twice as much IPA, but like close to it, like as everything else. I think that number is like, or that percentage is like coming down, you know, as like those other beers, kind of pick up more traction. But I think like we brew them like within like a Forest and Main, you know, mentality in a way. Not to say like only like traditional stuff. Like we definitely do like hazier ones, but they don't look like orange juice. You know, they're just like more yeast and suspension. And then like, I don't know, maybe some people wouldn't even call them hazy, but like we do, and we definitely like approach those beers differently. You know, we use a different yeast for those than we do for like our West Coast IPAs. So we use a Kolsch yeast for all like the hazy IPAs, and then like we'll start a dry hopping schedule like a little bit earlier than we would for the West Coasters or like the traditional IPAs, where we use our Fuller's yeast, which we use like for all like the British pub beers, and let that kind of like drop bright and then dry hop after that. They're both like awesome beers, and I feel like certain people like gravitate more toward one than the other. I think like we've noticed like our West Coast beers like are selling better than the hazy ones, which is kind of cool. We have even like put some caramel malt in a couple of the hoppy beers. And I don't know, man, some of those like classic caramely pine and citrus flavor combos, like they feel so good sometimes.
Oh, totally, dude. It pulls on my heartstrings. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah, we do a beer like every at the end of every year. We call Merriment, which is kind of like our little like clone of celebration. And I don't know. Yeah, total nostalgia beer for us, but it's one of our favorites.
Dude, I just it's funny you mentioned that because I love that beer. It's one of my favorites. And my partner and I drove up to New York, to upstate, to see the eclipse a couple of weeks ago, and I drank a Celebration.
Nice.
It was great. Yeah. It took me right back.
Yeah. Yeah. That's perfect.
Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. So, go ahead.
Yeah. So like, I don't know. We love like those hoppy beers. They taste great. They maybe like aren't like, don't have like the same passion behind them as like Saisons do for us. But we still like just kind of bring, you know, our approach to those beers, and we're always like trying to like tweak and make them better. But I think it's been nice. Like, it seems like things have kind of like settled a bit compared to like the way, IPA trends used to be. Like, it just feels like people are more content, like with the beers that are available, rather than like this gotta catch them all, gotta taste the next new thing kind of mentality. It was kind of stressful not to just like be in the industry around. I think not even that we like played that game that much, but just I don't know, like the idea of like chasing down like the newest hop variety and making sure like you contract enough for that, like it's kind of like a headache that, you know, I was glad we're not really part of.
Yeah, well, I mean, I can tell you, like, 2020 Challenger, a whole cone is super cheap.
Yeah. Anytime, like, old Holy Brambling Cross comes on like, the spot list, I'll buy it right up.
Oh, yeah, dude, it's awesome. I love that stuff.
Yeah.
So, do you guys, I mean, have you guys done, one of the things that happy marriage of taking like a Saison and then dry hopping it and kind of treating it like an IPA, do you guys ever do that in GW, or is it like put that in cans?
We did a couple years ago. We had kind of like a series of Saisons that would kind of go through like the primary fermentation with our foraged yeast, then sit in barrels with like a more diverse mixed culture, with more like bacteria, and Brett. And then we would add like some fruit and like a light dry hopping with like some like American style hops to that. And I was kind of like blown away by those beers. They did like, they tasted like the hop character we would get from that would have like, I don't know, it was not reminiscent of like those same hops in an IPA at all. Like, I don't know if it's just like that biotransformation process or like in a specific interaction with like the Bretts that are there and, or just like the acid and then like all like the hop compounds, but like it would just get these like crazy different like tropical fruit characters and like kind of like geranium flower and like rose flower like aromas and stuff. So we had a series of those. I think we like kind of fell away from those beers, maybe just like through the pandemic, but we actually just like just packaged up another dry hopped, like funky barrel aged Saison that kind of has those same characters. I think those flavors are wild and like really cool. And I'm like really curious about like the science behind all that, because it's just like, it's one of those things that's like so much different or greater than the sum of its parts. But I don't know who to ask about that stuff.
Yeah. I think there's a lot there. Dude, that's super cool. What do you have on the horizon that you're super stoked about?
I think we got our 12th anniversary coming up, which is pretty wild.
Right. Yes. Yes. Anyway, happy anniversary, dude. That's amazing. Oh,
yeah. Thanks, man. Yeah, it's pretty wild to think we're looking at like old pictures and just like looking how like young and baby faced we were 12 years ago.
Didn't even know the world yet.
Yeah. Little baby boys. but yeah, we have, we've been doing like a cool ship beer every year. The guy, we get our like local malts from at Deer Creek Malt House. He has this like, cool ship. Like it serves as a cool ship for us, but it's really, he uses it as like a mobile germination demonstration like tank.
Oh, cool.
So he'll go to like schools or something and do like, you know, a demo on like how grain sprouts and germinates or something. But he offered to like use it as a cool ship with us. So he'll like drive it to the brewery. We try to like schedule it sometime, like, I guess it's been like kind of late March the past few years. Just try to find like a nice weather date. And we'll use, you know, raw and malted, you know, grains from him, whole bunch of like aged hops, let it sit in the cool ship, and then yeah, just kind of treat them as like spontaneous beers. We try to keep a couple barrels that like we'll kind of like reuse from year to year, to kind of like, you know, any microbes that are in the barrel, it's kind of like these are our cool ship barrels now. But then each year we've also tried to use like new, as clean as they can be, barrels to us, to kind of just get like a truly like whatever it picks up in the cool ship kind of spontaneous thing going on. So I was actually just tasting some of these like earlier today. We are about to release, I'm curious how you guys do this, because I know you do like a ton of spontaneous beer, like keep track of like what year a beer was like brewed versus like when it was bottled versus like when it was released. So we have like Cool Ship 2022, which we're about to release. But I just got confused because like on the case it says 2023, but that was when we bottled it. So it's been in the bottle for a year. That beer was, you know, in the barrel for a year. And I think that'll be the third iteration we've done of this beer. So we're kind of getting to the point where we like, you know, have saved some barrels from each year and kind of can like work up to like some kind of like goose blend. Hopefully like this year, if things go well.
Sweet.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Good luck. And I would say, find somebody who's really good at organizing to keep track of that, because I don't know, man, I get so confused. especially because like you are right. It's very confusing, especially if you're doing like a goose blend, because like we just packaged up ours and it was like 2020. Oh man. It's a 1, 2, and 4 year blend, you know? And so it's like, and then it was just packaged up like a couple months ago. So is it like, is this 2024? Is it 2023? It's like,
yeah. It's yeah. Confusing. So I guess like right now we've just kind of gotten to this spot where we are kind of incorporating different years, like in the blends. Whereas before it was like, we only had 1 year to pull from, you know, we wanted to save like the year before. So they were kind of like year to year. It was all like all from the same kind of batch. Whereas now going forward, we're kind of like have enough old stock to kind of like pull from. So yeah, we need like the accountant's brain.
Well, dude, thank you so much for chatting with me today. And I was really stoked to be able to get you on the podcast and have this moment, because I know you guys are super busy, as I'm super busy. Everybody's super busy. So it was nice to take it like a minute, sit down. And congratulations on the 12 years. I'm very happy. And I can't wait. I can't wait to come up and see you guys.
Yeah. Thanks so much, Jennings. This was a really honored to have you asked to do this. So thank you so much.
Oh man, the honor and the pleasure is all mine. So we will be back next episode of this show with Jared as the host, having a conversation with a brewer of his choosing. That will be on the air. It'll be on the air in 2 weeks. So make sure you stay in tune for that, or tune in for that. Visit allaboutbeer.com and follow on social media to support journalism in the beer space, and check out patreon.com/allaboutbeer. I'm Jennings Carney at Penn Druid, and thank you for listening to the Brewer to Brewer podcast.
First Tee is a proud sponsor of the Brewer to Brewer podcast. First Tee invites you to explore the rich and versatile world of teas and botanicals, including osmanthus flowers. Email info@firsttea.com, that's FIRSDTEA, for support in choosing the right botanicals and the optimal ways to use them.
Ironheart Canning is the quality leader in mobile canning and much more. With a decade of packaging experience, Ironheart is your turnkey solution for all your canning needs. Are you looking for a unique can size or nitro dosing? Ironheart offers filling sizes from 6 ounce up to 19.2, dedicated equipment for mixed culture products, and nitro dosing capabilities for still beverages and beer. Looking to break into other beverage segments? Look no further. Ironheart also provides a robust network of co-packing solutions to get a variety of beverages in cans, both alcoholic and non-alcoholic alike. Ironheart Canning. You have the capability because Ironheart can do it for you. Visit them at ironheartcanning.com or email info@ironheartcanning.com.
For more than a decade, the Beer Law Center has been dedicated to the craft beverage industry, meeting the legal needs of breweries, wineries, distilleries, and all manner of alcohol producers and sellers around the country. From company formation to federal and state licensing, trademarks, regulations, and compliance, or if you're buying or selling an alcohol business, the Beer Law Center should be your first call. The firm never charges for an initial consultation, and if they can't help you, they'll help you find someone that can. Have a legal question? Contact the Beer Law Center on social media at Beer Law Center and online at beerlawcenter.com.
Malt Europe Malting Company is based in North America, specializing in growing and producing quality malts for the craft beer and distilling industries. With local farms and malt houses spread across the United States, Canada, and Mexico, MMC's commitment to excellence is fully ingrained into every batch it produces, ensuring breweries and distilleries of any size can create the finest beverages on the planet. Visit MaltEuropeMaltingCo.com to learn how Malt Europe can support your malting needs. Or you can contact them at customersuccess@MaltEurope.com or call 844-546-MALT for questions or to place your order. Malt Europe, premium grains from field to flavor.